The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, that was a smoother start than yesterday. It was, as it turns out, it was Sam's fault. I just want to go back and correct the record. We are here to present the truth. And the truth of it is, he hit a wrong button yesterday, and we had an old show playing as I was trying to come on the air. And if you haven't seen the fun, it's probably been deleted from the history books. It's deleted from YouTube. You went in and deleted it. Just like, who is it, Dorsey over Twitter? If he doesn't like it, he takes it out. It's just a little mistake we made. But yesterday we got off to a slow start. But the program is still worth listening to if you'd like to listen to it at the trumpet.com website. Well, hello, everyone. We're certainly glad that you're back with us. A few emails from our listeners. This one from the UK. It says, please know how much I appreciate your Trumpet Daily radio show and how so very pertinent it is to our times and current world events. It says, thank you for standing up for God and biblical truths and for being a beacon of light in these dark times. It's never been as relevant as it is now, and your dedication and righteous indignation is to be commended. Another one wrote from yesterday, I've never felt this sense of urgency before in my life. And I think that is an excellent way to respond to all of the craziness that we're seeing in the world today. It should fill us with a sense of urgency. Jesus, after all, said to watch and pray always. We watch world events in relation to Bible prophecy, and we see, we know, we're getting right near to the end of this age. We know that the return of Jesus Christ is near. We know it's at the door. And so we've got to be ready. Jesus said we've got to continue working. We've got to be found doing right up until the return, right up until he sets foot on this earth. Another listener says, powerful message. Surely this is God's church and his warning to us all. Another one wrote, responding to yesterday, absolutely great program. Thank you once again. And then finally, it says, it would be too much to ask more of these fine people at the Trumpet Daily, but the show goes by much too fast each day. Thank you all for your efforts to keep us informed. And thank you for your feedback. If you'd like to write to the program, you can do so at td@kpcg.fm. Did I say that right? FM? Oh, well, I've got to get moving. I'll come to it later. The unrestrained rage and the Orwellian insanity, it continues. It continues. I was thinking this morning, you know, all of this. Well, coronavirus in many ways seems like it was a couple years ago now. I know the major media, they're trying to resurrect it and say that the cases are increasing in Texas and Alabama. It's always the red states, of course, because they opened early. And then they just skip right over the fact that there have been 2 weeks of protests sponsored by Black Lives Matter and Antifa. You know all about that. In any event, all through COVID-19, you just got the feeling every day as you sifted through the headlines and read a few articles that they were just making it up as they went. Just make it up as you go. And then you get to the case of police brutality and all of the riots that follow. And then now just trying to keep up with the new rules with respect to race. It makes your head spin. And again, you see people just making things up as they go. When have we ever seen Judges 21 and verse 25 in the news practically every day. Everyone just doing what seems right in their own eyes. There's no final authority. There are no absolutes. It just changes from one day to the next. And as I've been covering in the last couple weeks, we're even going back now and changing the history. We're changing things on the fly. This story from the Associated Press. It says here, Merriam-Webster is revising its definition of racism after a Missouri woman's emails claimed it fell short of including the systemic oppression of certain groups of people. So now I guess Merriam-Webster is Wikipedia. Everybody has a hand in writing up the definition. You can submit an email. Of course, it's all over the news. Systemic racism. And like Larry Elder said a couple weeks ago, the whole premise is wrong. The whole premise, of course, there are racists in every society. But here the United States is the freest, most prosperous nation in the history of the world. And people are, in some cases, dying to get in. They're desperately doing everything that they can to get into the United States of America. Well, if they keep watching CNN International, they may not want to come. So she writes in and says, okay, you've got it right in the individual case, but there's not enough in the definition that really gets into and explains. I'm trying to explain this to my children, keep in mind. There's not enough in the definition that explains the systemic racism that's all through our society. It's embedded into our society, all of our institutions, the whole system. So she writes it in, and, well, Webster's responds by saying, you know what, we'll change that in the next edition. Oh, yes. We will acknowledge that it's in our DNA. Barack Obama was right. It's just painful to watch this. And then, like I say, the erasure of our own history down south here in the UK, Plymouth. They've got this square named after Sir John Hawkins. And the city officials have come out and said, we've got to change the name. We have got to change the name. It says at the BBC, a public square in Plymouth named after a 16th century slave trader is to be renamed, the city council has said. I think he was involved in three slave ship expeditions. Three! And like Richard pointed out this morning, it was mostly in competition with the Spanish. Or a little bit of pushback, I guess, because they had a monopoly on the slave trade. But we aren't criticizing Spain. It's just the United States and Britain. It's just these two nations, the U.S. and America. It says here, named after Sir John Hawkins, he was an Elizabethan sailor who is described in the Encyclopedia Britannica as the first English slave trader. It comes after anti-racism protesters tore down a statue of slave trader Edward Colston in Bristol on Sunday. We showed you that clip yesterday. It says, Plymouth City Council leader Tudor Evans said the city needed to acknowledge some aspects of its past. And in a statement made to the council chambers, he said the city had an incredible maritime history. And that's the thing. He's up there with Drake. You have Hawkins and Drake in the time period, 16th century. This is, as we've noted before, this is when England was really on the ascent as God was preparing this nation, this island. He was preparing it for its empire. And that's something that was promised back in the book of Genesis, the first book in the Bible. Britannica says, English naval administrator and commander, one of the foremost seamen
of 16th century England and the chief architect of the Elizabethan Navy. This is Sir John Hawkins. He's got to be erased. Someone that actually played a role in laying the foundation for the British Empire. Shakespeare's around at the time. He's laying the foundation with respect to thought and language. And then you have Hawkins and Drake preparing the way for England, what would become Great Britain, to dominate the seas. But like Colston, he had a short period of time, Mr. Hawkins did, where he was trafficking slaves. And so we need to erase him from the history book. We need to take him out. Never mind what he did with the Navy. Never mind what he did for the Empire. Never mind what he did in fighting against the Spanish Empire. He helped fight against what would bring the world the Spanish Inquisition. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because you have to keep track. I'm not sure. Every day it's changing, right? What history is good? What history is bad? But the Spanish Inquisition hunting down Protestants, Jews, Muslims. So Hawkins fought against that. And you look at some of the cruelty that the Spanish brought into the Americas. But leaving that aside, just look at the good that he did for the nation, for the empire, what would be the empire. It's all a concerted effort, it's a satanic plot to blot out the name of Israel. There's a spirit behind this. We've talked about how dramatic the changes have been just since the era of Winston Churchill. Well, his statue was defaced the other day, too. That's just taking us back 80 or 70 years. Churchill lived in 1965, in fact. What would Churchill think about this effort to remove Sir John Hawkins from that square down in Plymouth? Well, he was referring back to Hawkins and Raleigh and Drake and others as he was trying to stir up the spirit in Britain to resist against the Nazis. What would Churchill say up at Liverpool University? One of their halls is named after a former prime minister, William Gladstone. He was a prime minister back in the 1800s during the Victorian age, so much more recent than Hawkins. But he was a popular prime minister, especially with the poor people in England. He was nicknamed the People's William. He established elementary schools across the country. He did a lot for workers' rights. He's the one who purchased the Suez Canal. He proclaimed Queen Victoria as Empress of India. And so Liverpool wants to get rid of his name. Why? Well, because his dad owned slaves. He didn't own slaves. He didn't traffic slaves. But his dad did. And so he's got to be removed as well. Even if you're related to someone that had a slave, well, you've got to be blotted out. I mean, what else are we going to do? This is the new rule. Just go in there and tear it down. There have been a number of people online that said, if this is the criteria by which we're judging now, any family connection, well, you can probably erase just about any historical figure. If we're judging everything by today's standards, human standards, human nature, political correctness, the ever-evolving standard of the mob, if you're judging it by today, the mob standards of today, everyone gets erased. That's how it works. These are the new rules. James Dellingpole at Breitbart, he said, perhaps not since the era of Oliver Cromwell, when Puritans smashed and burned any work of art or architecture they deemed impure, has Britain engaged in such a frenzy of iconoclasm? That's a word for the times. Iconoclasm. The definition is a person who attacks cherished beliefs, traditional institutions, as being based on error or superstition. That's what we're seeing on the streets. Iconoclasts, they're out there to destroy. They're attacking traditions. They're attacking cherished beliefs. Dellingpole says across the country, mobs of petty tyrants, puffed up with self-righteousness and moral fervor, are plotting which little piece of British history they can vandalize or destroy next. It says, ironic perhaps, given Oliver Cromwell himself is now on the list of condemned statues. We've got to get rid of him too. It says, what a shame that these vandals aren't better versed in the history of iconoclasm. They could start by reading this superb essay, Iconoclasm and the Erasing of History, by historian Alexander Adams. And it says, and it almost inevitably tends, this is further on in Dellingpole's piece, he says that this movement to tear down statues almost always ends in greater violence. We're just at the beginning here. This is the beginning. Don't let the fact that riots from a week and a half ago, don't let the fact that they've died down somewhat make you think that, well, good, finally, this is over. We're really at the early stages of mass rioting and civil war. He quotes from this historian who says, the activists of today heedlessly erase history they haven't yet learned to read. They act as the hammer that extremists use to deface the cathedrals and museums our ancestors built. Could this hammer soon be turned from smashing statues to killing people? It has happened before. Yes, indeed, it has happened before. And people are calling for a revolution. CNN, of course, is comparing it to the Founding Fathers. But it much more closely aligns with the French Revolution. Mob rule. We don't like it, just tear it down. Look at this scene from Richmond, Virginia, yesterday. This is a statue of Columbus, clip 11. Burn it, and then dump it into the harbor. They saw their brothers in Bristol the other day and thought, that's a pretty good idea. Let's tear it down. You know, last year, a little over a year ago, we went through Virginia. My family did, and we saw all these. There's probably more historical sites in Virginia than just about any other state. That was like the cradle of the United States of America, the 13 colonies. We saw Monticello. How much longer before they tear that down? Monticello. The tour that I took just a little over a year ago, they were telling us that Thomas Jefferson was a rapist. Not just a slave owner, a rapist. Oh, yes, the author of the Declaration of Independence. They don't like him now. The New York Times doesn't like him now. Remember Donald Trump from a couple years ago? How much longer? Are you going to go after Jefferson? Are you going to go after Washington? Here's Christopher Columbus. Was he a flawed man? They all were. Just like the mob is. Who has more flaws? Just looking at it morally. Judging by a biblical standard. Just like Dellingpole says, puffed up in their self-righteousness. The self-righteous mob looking for whatever statue they can destroy. How much longer before they start burning and throwing human beings into the harbor? It's frightening, some of these scenes. What are we supposed to do now? Are we going to change the District of Columbia Or all of the what about British Columbia and Canada? What about the Columbia River? Should we just go and erase all those? Should we blot it out? What about Amerigo Vespucci? He's the one that we got the name America from. We better check into his background. We better look at his history. He might have done something wrong. Did he ever have a slave? Was he ever cruel to the Native Americans or the Native Indians? All of this, keep in mind, is so that we might get justice for George. That's what this is about, right? Justice for George Floyd. Making it up as we go. Who knows? Who's going to say something today in the United States? What prominent official is going to say something today that ends up getting him fired? I noticed the CrossFit founder. He had to step down. He tweeted out something that's, well, it's insensitive. It's insensitive. Well, he's got to go. Forget about his track record. Forget about how many lives he's helped. He's changed a lot of lives for the better. Black, white, brown. People going to CrossFit gyms all over the world, and they're been heavy into diet as well and getting rid of those underlying comorbidities that you've heard about during the coronavirus. Going to the cause, the root cause of so many of our health problems. But no, he said something insensitive. He's got to go. The King's announcer, he tweeted out All Lives Matter. He gets fired right away. Drew Brees has to apologize four times. His wife does as well. And then the media, they get up on the air every day and they tell you how wonderful these protests are. They're so peaceful. It's what America needs to heal. It's what the scene that you just saw, that's what we need to bring the races together. CNN partnered up with Sesame Street to help educate our children. And of course, if CNN is involved, you know it's a complete and total disaster. But here's Sesame Street telling our little kids all that they need to know about the protests. Clip one.
Daddy, Alma doesn't understand. What's happening? Why are these people together?
Oh, well, they're gathering together to protest.
Protest? Alma doesn't understand. What's a protest?
Oh, a protest is when people come together to show they are upset and disagree about something. They want to make others aware of the problem. Through protesting, people are able to share their feelings and work together to make things better. They make signs like this.
Oh, wow. We can come together and share our feelings and make a nice sign. Protests. Peaceful protests. So we're telling the children they're so peaceful. 14 days of these protests. 19 people have been killed as a direct result of the protest or the rioting. The indirect, I covered some of that yesterday. All the homicides on May 31st in Chicago, 18 of them. In just one day, because the police, they were too busy watching the rioters. And so the murderers were coming out in full force as well. How many people have died as a direct result of these so-called protests? There was a headline just this morning or yesterday. Murders are up 250% in Los Angeles. This is the area that they want to defund the police. This is where the police are taking a knee. This is where the mayor has said, hey, we're going to get rid of the money for the police department, as if that's going to help the situation. 14 days of protests, 19 dead. This is from Forbes magazine. So yesterday there's the funeral for George Floyd. But what about some of these others? Italia Kelly, I mentioned her last week. This 22-year-old woman that got shot in the back. She was just starting to leave the protest. That's so peaceful. You can just come together and express yourself and bring a nice sign. And Elmo thought that was really nice sounding, huh? Just really sweet. Well, this young lady knew where it was headed. She tried to get out of there, but she was just a little bit too late. And a stray bullet killed her. What about her funeral? What about her life? I don't think she was arrested in her life. Maybe she was. I don't know. I don't know enough about her, but was she arrested and sent to prison for 5-6 years? She had her whole life ahead of her. Then you had the hero, David Dorn. He wasn't the only officer to go down. Dave Patrick Underwood, 53 years old in California. He was killed while on guard duty. He was outside a federal courthouse in Oakland, shot dead during the rioting. What is the most tragic of all in these senseless deaths? Well, I suppose they're all different in whatever way, but that the media would just run from these statistics, that they would just erase. They're erasing these statistics. They're erasing these stories in real time. The Wall Street Journal had a piece recently just comparing these riots from the last couple of weeks to the Los Angeles riots in 1992. And there are some similarities. It says both were occasioned by appalling video images, and both divided the nation along partisan and ideological lines. The differences between the two events, however, are more revealing. It says the violence in 1992 came after a court verdict. The beating and arrest of Rodney King had happened more than a year before. This year's riots came within days of George Floyd's killing by Minneapolis officers. See, this time we're not even gonna wait around for the verdict. Now, what happens, by the way, if a year from now that verdict doesn't go the way that everyone just knows that it must go? In any event, back then the verdict came out and the rioting started. Today, the mob decided instantly, we've got to take to the streets. If LeBron James is tweeting about it, we've got to go start burning stuff. It says here, the riots of 1992 were mostly confined to poor and working class areas of Los Angeles. This week, this article's from last week, but it says this week saw mayhem all over America and in Los Angeles, New York, and elsewhere. The rioters targeted wealthy streets and neighborhoods. They smashed up Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. That didn't happen in 1992. But then listen to this. Perhaps the most striking difference is the rationalization and sometimes full-throated defense of violence from left-wing elites. The glorification of havoc, the vilification of cops and their middle-class admirers, highfalutin defenses of vandalism. Now, that's a pretty significant difference. It tells you a little bit about the media in 2020. All of this rationalization, even sometimes a full-throated defense of vandalism, of rioting, of arson, of murder. 14 days of protests, 19 dead. Tell little Elmo about that. 19 directly. And keep in mind, last year there were just 9 cases of African Americans being gunned down by unarmed African Americans being gunned down by police. Just 9, which, as I've shown you before with the statistics, Heather McDonald, Victor Davis Hanson, and so on. The law enforcement officials in the United States of America, never mind what you hear and see on TV, They are incredibly restrained, to a fault in some cases, because there's quite a few police officers that get gunned down from the villains, from the criminals. Well, never mind the facts. We've just got to turn those little children watching Sesame Street, we've got to turn them into good social justice warriors. After all, they could be on the streets in 10, 12 years. Here's another clip from this Sesame Street commentary on, I guess you can call it that, on the protest. Clip two.
They look upset. Are the protesters sad?
They are sad and upset, and they have every right to be, Elmo. People are upset because racism is a huge problem in our country.
It's so huge, and it's systemic. Webster's is changing that now. They're adding that to the definition. That means it is everywhere. It's like the air you breathe. We take in like a million immigrants. America. A million immigrants per year. What other nation on earth does that? And why do they want to get in? Why would they want to go to the United States of America? America has its problems. There's no getting around that. But the way it is portrayed on CNN, in the university classroom, in Hollywood, on Sesame Street, it is insanity of the highest order on display every day. Such a huge problem. I guess Barack Obama, he had 8 years in the White House. Remember the healing they talked about in 2008? I think it was Chris Matthews or somebody that said it was the greatest speech on race and race relations since Martin Luther King. He was the savior coming in 2008. And it's, I guess, judging by the commentary, it's, what, so much worse? Because of what? Well, I guess Donald Trump, for one. But then it's that systemic problem. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. Mr. Obama was back there, I think it was 2015, when he was going on and on about the DNA. And now that's just the conventional wisdom. So much so that Merriam-Webster is changing its definition of racism to include the point that you are guilty if you are white. There's a collective guilt. Here's one last clip from that Sesame Street, clip three.
Racism? What's that?
Oh, racism is when people treat other people unfairly because of the way they look or the color of their skin.
The color of their skin? Oh, Elmo doesn't understand, Daddy. Elmo has friends with different types of skin. Oh, and fur, too. Black, brown, pink, purple.
I know, Elmo, but not all streets are like Sesame Street. I mean, on Sesame Street, we all love and respect one another. Across the country, people of color, especially in the black community, are being treated unfairly because of how they look, their culture, race, and who they are. What we are seeing is people saying enough is enough. They want to end racism.
That's what he's saying about the protesters. They want to end racism. So, what are they doing? Well, in some cases, in far too many cases, they're smashing and burning and looting their way across America. Justice for George. They had the ceremony down in Houston yesterday for Mr. Floyd. And this is a white pastor. I think he's from the Houston area. And listen to what he says about honoring George Floyd. clip 4.
And you have been a model for not just America, but for the whole world. And now we must follow your good example. Calling out anything that doesn't honor George or any of the rest of us, domination, injustice, oppression, racism.
Now, he's there not talking just about the protesters, but the black community, saying how that they have called out anything that doesn't honor George. If you don't honor him, you could be fired. You could be fired. The mob will come after you. I think of what Candace Owens said in that video she put together last week, how that he's now a martyr. He's now a hero. And she went into some of his history and said, look, as a community, we can do better. We should be holding up others like this slain former police chief, David Dorn. But here, I mean, these are the new rules. He's a hero. He's a martyr. And then they're taking to the streets to protest because they're going to end racism. That's the goal. How do you end it when everyone in America who's white is born as a racist? How do you end it? Well, it doesn't end. It's already a war of words. It's a war that was taken to the streets for, I guess, nearly a week. And the rage continues with these statues being pulled down and such. And then the will worship. We're all supposed to just go along. We certainly can't criticize the Black Lives Matter movement. That is not tolerated at all. Criticizing it in any form. That soccer player in Los Angeles, I think it was his wife, who criticized the looters in Minneapolis. And they came after him, the management, the LA Galaxy, they came after him and said, look, you denounce what your wife said and embrace Black Lives Matter. And he did all those things because you're supposed to grovel if you're going to hold on to your job, your position. And then he gets fired after all of that for something his wife said. These are the new rules in the Overcomer booklet. My father says the phrase wisdom in will worship is better translated forced worship of demons. Satan actually got them in a position where he could force them into his worship. Now, God never forces you into this at all. He asks you to voluntarily get behind it, being led by the Holy Spirit and using that Spirit. God is love. Satan is hate. He forces people to worship his way because in a lot of cases, they won't do it unless they are forced. We're seeing a lot of that. People being forced to go along, or at least they're coming under intense pressure to surrender to lawlessness, to surrender to the mob. Al Sharpton was at the funeral. I guess he just follows the Floyd family around everywhere now. He's at the funeral service yesterday talking about how evil the Trump administration is. This is clip 5.
You calling your cabinet in, trying to figure out how it's going to affect your vote rather than how it's going to affect our lives. You're scheming on how you can spin the story rather than you can achieve justice, wickedness in high places. You take rubber bullets and tear gas to clear out peaceful protesters. And then take a Bible and walk in front of a church and use a church as a prop. Wickedness in high places.
Wickedness in the White House. He says wickedness in high places, which of course is a phrase you'll find in Ephesians 6 and verse 12, where Paul says that we need to put on the whole armor of God. And before that, it says, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood. So Paul's not even talking about a human being here. He's talking about a spirit world. He's talking about the devil and his demon army. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. These are our enemies. We don't realize just how much our nature, and it is evil. It is evil. Jeremiah 17:9 says it, and it's the same way for whites, blacks, browns. And Satan is aggravating and exploiting this nature in us. And it's ripping our nations apart. And people are justifying the criminal behavior, saying that, well, we've got grievances. And we're here to fix it. We're here to end all racism. Wouldn't it be nice to just live in a world where there's no racism, where there's no evil people? What a counterfeit coming from the devil. As if these protesters, as if these rioters are going to bring peace. But that's the way Satan shows up with the mob and says, look, we're here to bring, we want to just put an end to racism and then we'll be satisfied. Even as they go about burning down businesses, stealing property, and demanding that you submit, demanding that you surrender. You get down on one knee. There's the chief in, I think, Webster, Massachusetts. He was laying down on his belly, on his chest. And then all the Democrat congressmen, senators, they're taking one knee for 8.5 minutes. 8.5. They were down there so long, Nancy Pelosi couldn't even get up. I can sympathize with having a bad leg myself. But going back to this spirit of surrender, it's powerful. Why? Because of the darkness of this world and the spiritual wickedness in high places. If only Mr. Sharpton would have added that word spiritual, then you're talking about an effective sermon. As it is, it's just like everything else you see in the society today. Pick and choose, and then bash Donald Trump with it. Pick and choose, and then bash the president. What we're talking about here is spiritual wickedness in high places. These are root causes. Ephesians 6 is revealing a root cause of the violence and the hatred. This is the enemy. The Apostle Peter said that we better be sober and vigilant because our adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. Satan is devouring a lot of people right now. A lot of people are believing lies. They're being told lies. I think there were quite a few facts in that, just that statement, that one clip from Al Sharpton. He didn't even get the facts right. But see, they're just lying about what happened at Lafayette Park. They just go on and on and on. It was totally peaceful, and then out comes President Trump with all the rubber bullets and the tear gas. Just lie. They lie. It was totally peaceful. William Barr said the other day that he actually got hit by one of the projectiles. So what are you supposed to do? This is the White House, as I said last week. This is the seat of government for the United States of America. The press would, I guess, happily like to see it overrun with rioters. Then the White House pushes back, and what are the press there to do? How dare you? How dare you push it back a block? We've got to be able to protest. Didn't you watch Sesame Street? Don't you realize how peaceful these protests are? These demonstrations? We're here to come together. We're here to bring peace. We're here to end racism. That's what they say. Even as they simultaneously vilify law enforcement, vilify the army, vilify the National Guard, any government organization that has the power and the government to put an end to lawlessness, it's coming under attack. The New York Police Union boss, Mike O'Meara, he gave a brief statement yesterday. He was in back of him. Well, you'll see in the video, but all these policemen are standing behind him, and then he's setting the record straight in front of, I hope it was a large gathering of reporters. This is what he had to say, clip six.
375 million interactions with the public every year. 375 million interactions. Overwhelmingly positive responses. Overwhelmingly positive responses. But I read in the papers all week, we all read in the papers, that in the black community, mothers are worried about their children getting home from school without being killed by a cop. What world are we living in? That doesn't happen. It does not happen. I am not Derek Chauvin. They are not him. He killed someone. We didn't.
We didn't. But with the ever-changing rules of today, he's guilty. He is Derek Chauvin. All of those men behind him, they're guilty as well. The whole institution is racist. So he comes forward with some facts, and he says, what world is this? Your children aren't threatened by the police? Yes, there's a bad apple here and there, and they should be dealt with individually. Just like Larry Elder said. But the lies these communities are being told, and everyone's in on it. The celebrities, the coaches, the politicians, the media, the universities, they're all in on it. Even as a million immigrants and many more, because if all of them could get in who wanted, there'd probably be 2 or 3 million. Even as a million immigrants are in some cases literally dying to get into the United States of America. This Los Angeles mayor that announced the defunding, there was a city council member yesterday. This, I think it was a woman. She too came out and said, we need to defund the police. Reporters ended up finding out that she used $100,000 of taxpayer money in order to have LAPD security around her house. So as long as they're secure, as long as the wealthy commentators are living in a gated community with their own security detail, how easy is it for them to then get up, puffed up with self-righteousness, and say, you know what? We need to get rid of all the guns. We need to get rid of all the police. Listen to this New York Police Union boss again here, clip seven.
We are restrained. And you know what? I'm saying this to all the cops here. Because you know what? Everybody's trying to shame us. The legislators, the press, everybody's trying to shame us into being embarrassed about our profession. Well, you know what? This isn't stained by someone in Minneapolis. It's still got a shine on it. And so do theirs. So do theirs. Stop treating us like animals and thugs and start treating us with some respect. That's what we're here today to say. We've been left out of the conversation. We've been vilified. It's disgusting. It's disgusting.
It is disgusting. I think I could listen to him talk for an hour. That's someone with a little bit of courage. It takes courage to stand up and say what he just said there. We're not Derek Chauvin. We're not We're not looking to target you or your children. We're risking our lives for you. Less than 20 years ago, the NYPD, they were celebrated following 9/11 as they rushed into burning buildings to save men, women, children, blacks, browns, whites. Today, they're the problem. Today, they're being vilified. It is disgusting. Viacom CBS pulled its TV show, Cops. That's been running for 30 years. It's one of its longest-running shows. It's just about police force work. 30 years, but they've got to pull it now. Why? Because cops are evil. The police are the bad guys. The police are part of the problem. They're a big part of the problem, according to LeBron James. HBO pulled Gone with the Wind from its HBO Max lineup because, what was it? It glorifies plantations? So these are the new rules. Gone with the Wind. Erase it. If it doesn't fit within the parameters that the social justice warriors have set, just dump it into the harbor. Just erase it out of the history books. Just deface the statue. It's disgusting. It is disgusting. Here, as he said, that police chief, stop treating us like animals and thugs. In what world do we live where the animals and thugs are praised and those trying to stop them are vilified? Upside down, one final statement here from this police chief, clip 8.
Trying to make us embarrassed of our profession. 375 million interactions. Overwhelmingly positive. Nobody talks about all the police officers that were killed in the last week in the United States of America, and there were a number of them.
There were a number of them, and yes, there should be a lot more coverage, a lot more of a spotlight put on those police officers who risked their lives to protect the public and the public's property. They have been gunned down, and there's surely more to come. These are courageous individuals. In the overwhelming number of cases, 375 million actions every year, 375 million interactions across the United States with police, and we're led to believe that they're all problematic, that they're all causing trouble, they're all causing problems, they're not solving anything. These are lies. It's the same spirit that wants to take that statue of Colston and dump it into the harbor, or Columbus. They're going to come for people soon enough. And incredibly, Satan's going to be there when they do, justifying it. Look, it has to be done. There's a systemic problem here that needs to be dealt with. We've tried the peaceful rioting, they'll say. Now we've got to take it to the next level. You're not listening. There's a real spirit world. There's a lot of spiritual wickedness in high places. That's for sure. And that's why, if you continue reading that chapter, and perhaps I should, it's not in my notes, so bear with me, but Ephesians 6, verse 12, we read earlier. Ephesians 6, Paul continues and says, "Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day. And having done all to stand," I mean, you're going to have to do everything you can to stand against this. To stand against this evil. spiritual wickedness in high places. The devil and his demon army, they are confined to this earth. And they're wrecking our nations, as I said last week. Here's how you stand against it. You've got to get up each day and put on the whole armor of God. And then verse 14 says, stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth. That's the first thing. I don't have time to get through all the other bits of armor that we put on. But the first thing that Paul stresses is truth. Put it on every day. Put it on every day and hold fast to it. 1 Thessalonians 5:21. Love it. 2 Thessalonians 2. You've got to love the truth. We need it as our sure defense. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can email us, td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.